Ladies and gentlemen, you are now listening to the Fantasy Baseball Hour with Al Melchior.
Happy Friday, everybody. You are listening to the Fantasy Baseball Hour. I'm your host, Al Melchior. Thank you so much for downloading the podcast and giving it a listen. Appreciate it. It's been 2 days since the last one. Not a lot of games because, well, at least we had a full slate on Wednesday. But on Thursday, just 4 games. But even though it's a relative lack of games, a lot of home runs. So got a lot of big home run performances to talk about. But really the focus here is to get you ready for next week. We are almost down to 3 weeks left in the season. Hard to believe it, but it is true. Big news, of course, too, over the last couple of days has been Shohei Ohtani. So talk a little bit about that. And again, with the focus being towards next week, talk about two-star pitchers. Interesting selection, lots of choices, and particularly lots of choices that I'm sort of on the bubble about. So I'll walk through those different situations. So let's start here with the latest on Shohei Ohtani. Back on Wednesday, it was reported that new UCL damage had been found, and that now Ohtani's been recommended to have Tommy John surgery. There's not been any scheduling of the surgery yet. I've not seen any reports as of yet that Ohtani's agreed to undergo the surgery, but it is being widely presumed. In fact, there was a piece that just came out in the last day or so from Jeff Passan of Yahoo Sports. Really interesting piece, and from a baseball fan and fantasy player perspective, some actually good news in there. But in the piece, Passan basically presumes, you know, as I think it's fair to do, that Ohtani will get Tommy John surgery, and that next season, obviously, Ohtani would not be able to pitch. But according to four different doctors that Passan interviewed, all specialists in UCL surgery, all four said that they believe that Ohtani, particularly as a left-handed batter, could be a full-time DH next season. So, you know, obviously you're missing half of the fun there with Shohei Ohtani, but, you know, it's a given, I think, pretty much that he's not going to pitch next year. So at least there's some hope and some, you know, backed up by some medical opinions that Ohtani could be a full-time DH next season. So that's very cool. And as if to prove the point, I guess, back on Wednesday, the last time that the Angels played, but after the report came out about Ohtani being recommended for Tommy John surgery, he went and had a 4-for-4 game with a couple of home runs against the Rangers. So obviously hitting, not a problem for Ohtani. Obviously there'll be more to come on that. Like I said, hard to imagine he's not going to have the surgery, but obviously the sooner that gets scheduled, the better the chances that he can do something next year, at least on the offensive side. Yadier Molina, going back to Wednesday again, since there was no show on Thursday. Yadier Molina left Wednesday's game at the Nationals with left hamstring tightness. So as we head to the weekend, you'll have to check and see if he's going to be back in the Cardinals lineup. Just a little bit earlier here on Friday, according to MLB.com, report that Homer Bailey is out of the Reds rotation. Tyler Mahle is back in. And that would line Mahle up as of right now for two starts next week at home versus the Dodgers and on the road versus the Cubs. I would find it hard to imagine the two start scenario where I would actually feel safe starting Tyler Mahle. He did have a very nice stretch earlier in the year. So I just don't want to take the chance first week back that he's going to recapture that form. And certainly with a couple of potentially really tough matchups with the Dodgers and the Cubs. But, you know, look, those are tough tests, so it'll be interesting to see if Mahle does well in those, and maybe we can think about him, particularly in deeper leagues, over the final 2 weeks of the season. Ian Kennedy is a candidate to start for the Royals on Sunday at the Twins. In any event, whenever Kennedy re-enters the rotation, and that, again, should be, if not Sunday, I would think very soon thereafter, Ned Yost is planning on going with a six-man rotation, according to MLB.com. That's going to have some implications for the two-star pitchers because the Royals next week have a seven-game schedule. And so under, you know, a normal five-man rotation, that would allow for two starters to get two starts. But as it stands right now, it's just one starter. And I think then the loser in that scenario is Brad Keller, who right now lines up to start on Tuesday against the White Sox. So this will, I guess, will be a spoiler alert here that when I get to talk about two-star pitchers, I will talk about the one who does look primed to make the two starts next week, and that is Jake Junis, who was my favorite pickup off of waivers for two starts this week. But now, assuming that Kennedy comes back on Sunday, that pushed Junis to Monday and give him two starts next week. But I'll talk about that more later on in the program. Couple of bullpen notes. One, very important to take note of as we head to the weekend, that Sean Doolittle may return at some point this weekend during the Nat series with the Cubs. So last night it was Greg Holland pitching in, I believe it's the ninth inning. Now I'm a little foggy again on my details here, but yeah, that's right. It was Justin Miller came in the eighth. Nats had a one-run lead, blew the lead. So Holland came in with the tie game. It's basically pitching in a closer-type situation. And Holland's pitched well lately. If for some reason there is a setback with Doolittle, I would think Holland would be the primary closer there. But the expectation is that Doolittle will be back sometime this weekend. He did throw on Thursday, but I have not seen any follow-up reports. Actually, I should be a little more careful. I said that. I did not even see a report that he did throw. I saw a report he was expected to throw on Thursday, and I've seen absolutely no follow-up on that. And here we are. I'm recording here Friday afternoon. But if Doolittle did throw, and there's no reason to think he didn't, and if he responded well and feels good, you know, right now as we're talking, if Doolittle's feeling good, then we can expect him back anytime, according to Masson. So watch that closely. Get him back in your lineup as soon as you can, as soon as you see that he's got the green light for the Nationals. And in the other bullpen note that I've got here, Andrew Miller, he did throw a bullpen session on Thursday and did respond well and felt good during and after the session. And Miller told the Cleveland Plain Dealer he thinks he's going to be back for next weekend. So not this current weekend, as is the expectation with Sean Doolittle, but rather about a week from now. Andrew Miller thinks he's going to be ready to come back. Of course, as far as I know, he doesn't have a medical degree, so we're going to have to wait on that and make sure there's no setbacks and make sure that his optimism is well-founded. But maybe we have Andrew Miller back about a week from now. Clint Frazier, we are probably not going to see him again this season. He had a recurrence of his concussion symptoms, and so according to Mark Carragher of The Athletic, Aaron Boone says that Clint Frazier is probably done for 2018. And according to John Heyman of FanCred Sports, the Blue Jays are not planning on bringing John Gibbons to manage the team for 2019. Sounds like from Heyman's report that it's a pretty mutual understanding there, that they've met, they've discussed it. And it sounds like they are going to part ways next season. And so the Blue Jays very soon will be in the market for a new manager. So before we get to some other things here, I solicited Twitter questions. I did get a question that I will answer, and it's a good one. And we take a look back at performances from the last couple of nights. And, of course, look ahead to next week. I want to take a look at the weather for Friday night. Got a nice full slate. And at least as of right now, we've got a full slate, but there are a few games that look like they're in danger of getting canceled or at least having a delay that could impact your fantasy team. So the Reds hosting the Padres, that's actually the first game that's supposed to start tonight, a 6:40 Eastern start in Cincinnati. And there's an 81% chance of precipitation for that scheduled first pitch. And it does drop off after that, so we may just be looking at a delay, but there is a decent chance, around a 45-50% chance of rain Looks like between around 8 and 11 Eastern time. So that does not look really great for the Reds and the Padres. And that's Desclafani and Kennedy in that one. You know, either those pitchers or the batters involved, definitely check in on that. And as far as the pitchers are concerned, I think this one's actually much more impactful for a larger swath of owners. Cubs at Nationals, this is going to be a John Lester start, and plus the 2018 debut of Joe Ross. So he's back in the Nationals rotation. 77% chance of precipitation at first pitch at Nationals Park, actually going up after that. So that looks like a really, really bad one. So if you were thinking of starting Joe Ross tonight, and again, you probably weren't thinking about that outside of deeper league, but if you're thinking about that, or if you were looking forward to a John Lester start, might be time to look at some other alternatives. Mets hosting the Phillies. That one is at Citi Field. We got a 31% chance of precipitation at game time and holding steady for several hours thereafter. So that one also looking like a threat for at least a delay. And again, that's a big one for Aaron Nola owners. So Nola and Mats in that one. So otherwise, looks pretty good. Should have a lot of games tonight, if not necessarily a full slate. Okay, so I do want to get to our one Twitter question. This is from @baseballbacker. And very to the point question here. Odubel Herrera, is it time to cut bait with him? And I think if you're talking about a standard league, like a 12-team mixed league, yes, it's time to cut bait for two reasons. One, because Herrera's not starting against lefties. So he's basically in a platoon with Roman Quinn. And, of course, I'm sure that this question is being asked because Herrera's just not hitting since the beginning of August. Just a 193 batting average, couple of homers, no stolen bases. And, you know, now that we're all but done with the season, I mean, we can look back at season-to-date stats and pretty much see what's happened this year. And it's not really been a good development for Herrera. We've seen a lot more power from him. And I actually wrote about this a few weeks back, talked about it on the show, that he seemed like an improbable candidate to see a surge in power because he's got one of the highest soft contact rates in the majors, one of the lowest hard contact rates. Not a great combination for a power hitter. And he's moved in that direction because he's pulling the ball much more this year than he has in the past. And one of the things that I really liked about Herrera coming into this season and really going back to last season as well, is that this is somebody who very consistently used the whole field. And so that's really taking away one of his best qualities, that you figured Herrera was going to give you a good batting average, a decent on-base percentage, even if he wasn't walking that much, and also give himself some opportunities to steal bases. And he's basically traded all that off for a little bit of extra power. So a little more analysis maybe than was being requested here. But so I would say that 12-team league, definitely cut bait with them. Probably about a borderline call in like a 14-team mixed league. And I'd say anything deeper than that, I guess 15-team, it's borderline as well. Because given that he's not playing every day, you can probably find an upgrade there. And I would say anything deeper than that, though, deeper than 15 teams, I think you keep him around just in case somehow he rebounds over the last few weeks. So anyways, yeah, for most owners, that would be a yes. Time to cut bait with Odubel Herrera. All right, well, let's take a look back mostly at Thursday's games. There were just four of them. But going back to Wednesday, I mean, I just have to talk a little bit here about Trevor Story because he did have a three-homer game, and that would have certainly, if there had been a Tuesday, a Thursday show, that would have been a top story to discuss here. So three home runs for Trevor Story, all off of Andrew Suarez of the Giants. And Story's just been a tremendous producer since the beginning of June. And, you know, so we think back to early in the season and, you know, given that last season was a bit of a disappointment for Story and got off to a slowish start this year, it's, you know, sort of funny to look back, sort of like with Matt Carpenter. And all the questions that we had, you know, earlier this season, is Carpenter on the, you know, the steady path to decline now? I don't think those were necessarily the questions for Story, because he's in an earlier stage of his career. But, you know, both of those scenarios look like they're just years ago and not months ago. So since the beginning of June, Story has hit .334 with 20 homers and 17 steals. So almost a .220 for Trevor Story in just over half of a season with a .334 average. That's remarkable. And his strikeout rate is down quite a bit this year. So that was one of the key knocks, maybe the biggest knock against Trevor Story the last couple of seasons. It strikes out too much. You know, he's going to be a one-dimensional power-hitting player. But 24% strikeout rate since the beginning of June. So definitely a notable improvement over last season. But that said, that alone does not explain the .334 average that he's put up in just over 3 months of play. So he's got 25% line drive rate. And also the fact he does play the home games at Coors Field. I think everybody's aware of that. So that's something that should help his batting average on balls in play. He's got a .396 BABIP. For practically any hitter, that raises a red flag, because there just aren't hitters that year after year after year hit about .400 on balls in play. But I don't think that the regression for Story, and I mean, I'm talking more about for next season. I mean, you know, we've got, you know, just over 3 weeks left here, so it's doesn't make a whole lot of sense to talk about regression from 3 months when we're projecting onto a 3 week period. But you know, looking forward more long term than short term, I would expect some regression. But I wouldn't be surprised if Story were a 300-ish hitter, 290, 300 next season, as long as he doesn't regress in terms of the strikeout rate. Because again, playing in Coors, you know, for half his games, that's a ballpark that is not just great for homers, great for doubles and triples, good for batting average on balls in play. And again, 25% line drive rate. He's not been consistently a line drive hitter, but he has had moments. You know, he's had parts of his career in the minors and majors where he's profiled that way. So, you know, a .350, .360 BABIP to me would not be out of the question for next season. So yeah, I mean, what you're seeing here maybe is more or less what you can expect to get from Trevor Story. Again, I think, you know, with some batting average regression, but, you know, certainly would look like a good shot for, you know, well over a 2020, maybe a 30-30 next season, for Trevor Story. Anyhow, moving on, to another shortstop who had a big game, but this time on Thursday, Francisco Lindor went 4-for-5, hit his 32nd and 33rd homers of the season at Toronto. So that takes him up to a .288 batting average. And to go with the 33 home runs, he's got 22 steals. So I don't think he's going to make it to 30-30, but maybe 25-25 could be, since he's stealing roughly a base per week, a little bit less. Yeah, Francisco Lindor doing everything we'd hoped for this year. Looked like a strong candidate to improve in batting average. Some positive regression there. That has happened. Power steal or power speed combination. He's already equaled last season's home run total. He also now has 4 homers over his last 4 games, which is good to see, because over his previous 22 games, this is really, to me, more of the relevant story about Francisco Lindor for fantasy purposes than the fact that he's on a little bit of a hot streak right now and had a big Thursday night in Toronto. Over the 22 games that preceded this 4-game mini hot streak, Francisco Lindor batted .221 with 0 homers and 3 doubles. So very little production over a period that was the better part of a month, more than 3 weeks. And it's just something to keep in mind, because you certainly, you know, right now going into next week, you wouldn't dream of sitting Francisco Lindor. Wouldn't even occur to you. And it shouldn't have occurred to you 4 games ago. So even though he had given you almost nothing in 3+ weeks. So, you know, we're in a spot right now with Giancarlo Stanton, with AJ Pollock, with Brian Dozier, Chris Davis, where they've been ice cold for a while. And I just, I, you know, maybe in a daily lineup league, maybe I could see sitting Dozier until you see signs of a hot streak. Chris Davis, I could even see that too, because he is a very streaky hitter. And if you can certainly find a way to avoid the slumps and you know, get him in your lineup when he's red hot, you know, that's fine. So with daily lineup league, it's a little bit of a different calculus, but I don't see how you could sit any of them in a weekly lineup league or a bi-weekly lineup league, you know, because again, the switch could come on just like it came on for Francisco Lindor. So you certainly with more marginal players, I think there's a lot of room to play the hot hand when you're talking playoff series, championship series, final push in roto leagues. I get it. But not for guys of that ilk. You know, and Lindor is certainly part of that club. Anyways, moving on. I'm going to look at the pitching equivalent to the Lindor situation in a little while. And again, that's a little bit different because you're not talking about, you know, setting a weekly lineup where somebody's going to play six or seven games. You're talking about a situation where a slumpy pitcher gets one start, or in a particular case we're going to discuss, two starts. Anyways, just building excitement for that part of the show. But I'm going to put that up on the shelf right now. Go to Francisco Mejia, who made his first start as a Padre. And it was a good one. It was a memorable one. Mejia had two homers against the Reds. And like I said, that was his first start, started behind the plate. So I don't have any inkling here in terms of whether that's going to mean that, you know, we're going to see him start taking some playing time away from Austin Tejas. I don't know how much Mejia is going to play. But certainly this does not hurt his case for getting some regular or semi-regular playing time. But it is worth looking back to what Mejia had done with the AAA affiliate, the El Paso Chihuahuas, what he did there. Because before he got traded there, Mejia was having a pretty blessed season in the Indian system. Their AAA affiliate, Mejia was batting .279, had just seven homers and 336 plate appearances. Now he had just a little bit more than a third of that playing time at El Paso, 132 plate appearances, and yet he equaled that home run mark, seven homers. So first of all, moving from the International League to the Pacific Coast League, better hitting environments in general. And in particular, El Paso's a really favorable hitting environment. So if we look at the home run splits, Mejia at El Paso, and yeah, I know we're talking about, you know, taking a fairly small sample and breaking that in half, but at El Paso, Mejia hit five home runs, had a 1.117 OPS at home at El Paso. On the road, just two homers and a 738 OPS. And this could be instructive because obviously Petco Park is not going to be much like the environment in El Paso. And a lot of those road venues probably were a lot better for hitting than Petco Park is. But, you know, very, very big home road splits. And yes, it's a small sample, but again, the splits are extreme enough that maybe there is something to them. So, you know, getting two homers in your first start sort of confuses the picture there, you know, because you would think, okay, well, maybe Mejia's not going to do that great at Petco Park, given that he didn't do that well, you know, earlier in the season, and didn't do that well on the road, even after getting traded to the Padres. So I guess the big wrap up here on Mejia is just not to get that excited in terms of, you know, rest of season, the 3 weeks we've got left here. It doesn't necessarily, I mean, look, he could be pulling, you know, a Jesse Winker, and it's not a great analogy because Winker really never showed that. Well, he had one season, I think, in the minors where he showed really good power, but the upper levels he didn't. Mejia certainly does profile from his minor league numbers to be a better power hitter than Winker, especially relative to the position. But the point I'm just making here is that, yeah, maybe there's a big surprise power burst here for Mejia. Maybe it's enough to catapult him into some semi-regular playing time. But that's a lot of ifs that have to go into that happening. So I still, despite the two-homer game and his first start for the Padres, my expectations are very mild for Mejia rest of season. I don't think he'd be anywhere close to the top of the list if I were looking to pick up a catcher in a 12-teamer, and maybe not even in a 14-teamer. In that same game, on the other side, not as big a night for Scott Schebler, but still a good night. Hit his 14th home run, and he's on a little bit of a mini tear here. Last eight games, Schebler's 10 for 27. He's hit a couple of homers now in those eight games, and he's also got three doubles. So hitting for average and power, I think Scott Schebler maybe a little bit lost in the shuffle there, and you know, having missed time with injury. Let's not forget about Scott Schebler over the last few weeks here. And Nick Markakis, he had a big game at Arizona, four-hit game that included his 40th double of the year. So maybe the start of a little something for Markakis, because his production in the second half it's not been bad, but really still a shadow of what he was doing earlier in the year. Slash line since the All-Star break, 278, 337, 420. So he's helping it with average, but that there's no big upset there with Nick Markakis helping with batting average, but the OBP is pretty mediocre, and so is the slugging, so is the extra base power. So see what else Markakis does this weekend, because maybe he can become a little more relevant again over the final weeks here. So just a couple pitchers I want to talk about. And again, just four games on Thursday. Not a whole lot really there to talk about. Although I should probably circle back to the Mejia thing, because both of those home runs came off of Luis Castillo, who gave up three homers total. And yet still wound up having not a terrible start. I think it was five runs, but two earned. So not too bad. Not too bad for Luis Castillo, but I'm going to get to the thing I alluded to a moment before. I'm going to talk a bit about Zach Greinke's start, which had me thinking a little bit. But before that, just quickly here, Shane Bieber, a start that at first glance really did not distinguish itself from his recent string of starts, where he always seems to be just kind of hovering around the quality start criteria of six innings, three earned runs. Did it again here, six and a third, four runs, but only three earned on seven hits and a walk, six Ks. That seems to be a very Shane Bieber kind of line. Did get 12 grounders in this one. And a little bit less hard contact, a little bit more soft contact in this one. So again, it's just one start. They're kind of minor signs there, but you know, if Bieber can get a lot more ground balls, and I know we're running out of time here, he's just got a handful of starts left, but you know, maybe one or two more starts where he's getting a bunch of ground balls and a lot of soft contact, you know, it probably speaks more to next year than, you know, the final week of the season. But you know, keep our eyes on Shane Bieber. But Zach Greinke, not a very good start for him against the Braves. Just five and a third, five runs, four earned on six hits and two walks, four Ks. Gave up a couple of homers. So I had talked, maybe it was a couple of weeks ago on the show, talking about Justin Verlander and Luis Severino and how many home runs those two pitchers were giving up. Now, Severino still hasn't really shaken that slump yet. Verlander, on the other hand, no home runs given up in either of his last two starts. It looks like he's totally back on track. But Greinke's in that kind of funk right now. And the thing is, he profiles as a pitcher that he tends to have very high average fly ball distances, you know, give up some hard contact. But you know, he misses enough bats that it doesn't hurt him that much. Just like, you know, the concerns that I had about Verlander were very much tempered by the fact that, yeah, he's giving up home runs, he's giving up hard contact, but he's still missing a lot of bats. So that's kind of what the risk that has been there all along with Zach Greinke, but he's really given up the home runs lately. So two of them against the Braves on Thursday night. Over his last five starts combined, seven home runs over 31 and two-thirds innings. That's not good. A 3.98 ERA, which is okay, but not what you're expecting from Zach Greinke. And all of this would probably barely be worth even mentioning except his next scheduled start is against the Rockies at Coors Field. And it looks like it's going to be a two-start week for Greinke. So he would get both the Rockies and the Astros on the road at tough venues. I think there's a little bit of a conundrum there. And I think it's not, I think it's a more of a conundrum that we have with Verlander, because I just think the Verlander's ceiling is higher. And so I put out a poll just to see how concerned people were. And so I asked people if they were going to start or sit Zach Greinke next week again at Colorado, at Houston. But I also tossed in Zach Godley because it's double starts for both Zach G's. Double Zach G's, double starts at Colorado, at Houston. Now, Godley's not been in a good good run of starts lately. Three of the last four have just not been good. And all four, his percentage of pitches in the strike zone is up substantially from where it's typically been. And to me, that's a bad sign for Zach Godley, because he seems to be at his best when he's effectively wild. And maybe he's just leaving too much of the, too many pitches there for hitters to hit, because it's just not going well for him. But nonetheless, I just thought for comparative purposes, I'd toss them both in the question. Zach Godley and Zach Greinke both line up for starts at Colorado and at Houston next week. Which would you bench in a 12-team mixed league? A grand total of 4% said they would bench Greinke and only Greinke. But another 19% said that they would bench both Greinke and Godley. And another 53% said that they would bench Godley. Only 24% said that they would bench neither. And I have to say, that surprised me a little bit. I guess I expected maybe fewer, to be honest. But I guess people are not willing to trust Zach Godley at this point with those matchups. It makes sense. So 24% of the people who voted in the poll said, yep, not starting either Zach Godley or not benching. So let me rephrase this. Not benching either Godley or Greinke. So about a quarter of the people said that they'd start them both. Greinke, if you add up the totals here, 4% would bench him, 90% would bench both. Little less than 1 out of 4 would bench Zach Greinke with these two starts. So I think that's probably about right where I would have expected it, that there's, some people are concerned, but, overwhelmingly more than 3 out of every 4 owners that answered the poll said, no, we're going. And that sounds about right, because that's kind of how I feel. Like, I'm 75-ish% confident that it's okay to start Zach Greinke next week with those matchups. I'm guessing, Colorado could really not go well, but I think probably he does okay enough at Houston that at least you're not drawing a negative. The consensus definitely seems to be here: start Greinke, sit Godley. I'm pretty much on board with that. I guess if you've got a really stacked rotation, maybe Greinke's somebody you consider sitting, but I think very, very few scenarios where I could really see doing that. But it is risky. It is risky. And I don't blame the 23% who are going to sit them. Let's get on to some of the other two-star pitchers here. So as I mentioned earlier, Jake Junis, as it stands right now, if Ian Kennedy starts on Sunday, then it would seem to be a certainty that Junis, he'll lose his two-start week this week. He'll get a two-start week next week versus the White Sox, versus the Twins at home. Love those two home starts for Jake Junis. If he's out there, get him. If you picked him up for this week, keep him because should be good next week. And then I talked on Wednesday's show a little bit about Wade Miley. Very good lately. I mean, he's been good most of the year when he's pitched and when he's not been hurt, but really backing up lately with more strikeouts. He starts at the Cubs, finishes up at the Pirates. So I'm not totally confident that Miley's going to shine at the Cubs. But,
I feel pretty good about this as a combo platter here, Cubs and Pirates. So after Junis, he's probably the option I like the best. And then you got Mike Minor. I'm not totally bought into the fact that he's getting more swings and misses and that's going to continue. But I do like the matchups at the Angels, at the Padres. Good venues. Those will mask those fly ball tendencies probably a little bit. So I like Minor about as much as I like Miley for next week. Not totally confident, but if you need that second start and you can't get Jake Junis, or you need a second two-star pitcher, Miley and Minor would be the ones that I'd be trusting the most here. And I think I'd go probably Miley a little bit, give him a little bit of an edge over Minor. Just the cutter's been so good for him lately. So Wade LeBlanc, I talked about him briefly on the Wednesday show. He's got those same good matchups, just in reverse. At home against the Padres, on the road at the Angels. So good venues for LeBlanc with the home start and then going to Angel Stadium. Pretty good matchups for him. So I'd make him kind of a close third. Miley, Minor, LeBlanc, I'd rank them as such. So pretty much I've got my four main preferences here. Junis, Miley, Minor, LeBlanc. But there's also some other ones. I'm much more on the fence and maybe even leaning a little bit on the other side of the fence with these next few, but they're worth considering. Lucas Giolito at the Royals, at Baltimore. Teams have been hitting a little better in the second half than they did in the first half, and a good venue at KC. And Giolito had been very good, but then sort of came off the tracks against the Tigers in his last start. So that concerns me a little bit, but I like the longer track record. So, Giolito is certainly one to consider. Sean Newcomb, mostly just because he's got the Giants at AT&T Park. That's just always a great matchup. Then he gets the Nationals at home. I like that less. So pretty ambivalent there about Sean Newcomb, but it is that start at the Giants definitely does intrigue me. Joe Musgrove, I don't love the matchups here at St. Louis, at Milwaukee. So this is sort of the opposite of like Wade LeBlanc, where I'm not sure I totally trust him, but I like the matchups and venues. Musgrove, I trust a bit more, but I just don't like the matchups. But over his last 11 starts, he's got a 3.34 ERA with a 22% soft contact rate. So not a lot of strikeouts, but he is getting tons and tons of chases. That's keeping the walk rate down. That's making him efficient. And he's also getting a lot of soft contact. That's a nice combination. I just wish I trusted the matchups a little bit more. Jaime Barria, he's got the Rangers and Mariners at home. So I do like the fact that they're home starts for Barria. It's done really, I imagine he'll be a popular pickup because over the last six starts, he's got just a 1.82 ERA. The strikeout rate is not great, but it's certainly good enough for a two-start week. Over the last six starts, a 23% strikeout rate, which is up from where it had been, but an 87% strand rate. So he's not a 1.82 ERA pitcher. I'm not even sure he's a 3 ERA pitcher, but I think he's probably good enough for a two-start week. And like I said, the home venue helps a bit, but I'm not overwhelmed here. So, Newcomb, Giolito, Musgrove, Barria, I'm very ambivalent about all of them, but particularly in deeper leagues, definitely worth consideration. That pretty much sums up the ones I'm really interested in. I would say that Antonio Senzatella, because he's got that coveted Giants matchup at AT&T Park. Maybe if you go a little bit deeper, you go with him, but it's at home at Coors Field versus Arizona. That could be tricky, but that Giants start maybe makes him a deeper league option. And then a couple of Marlins lining up for two start weeks. Jose Ureña and Trevor Richards, they've got the Mets and the Phillies on the road. Really not. It would have to be a very deep league. So they're kind of like the best of the rest, but there's a pretty big drop off, to the bulk of the pitchers that I've been talking about, and then to the likes of Senzatella, Ureña, and Trevor Richards. So that pretty much winds it up. So looking forward to hopefully a full slate of games on Friday, but again, we'll have to check back on the weather to see exactly, you know, if we maybe need to sit John Lester or, you know, see what's going on with those that handful of games that I talked about a little bit earlier in the show. But anyways, I wish you the best of luck, not only here on Friday night, over the weekend, and getting ready for the week ahead. And it's not it's a nighttime first pitch on Monday, so I'll be soliciting your Twitter questions yet again. Anyways, have a great weekend, everybody. Have a great next week, and most important, take care.